Yossi ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim Omer, Yossi ben Yochanan, who was the personality of Yerushalayim, Yehi Beischa Pasuach L'Ravacha, your home should be open wide, the Yu Aniyim B'nei Beischa, you should make the poor as if they are members of your household, and the Altar B'Sicha in Ha'isha, don't talk too much idle talk with a woman, the Ishto Amru, even your own wife, Kal V'Chomer B'Eishas Chaveh, or even surely somebody else's wife, Mikan Amru Chachomim Kol Zman Shodem Mar B'Sicha in Ha'isha. From here the Chachomim learn that if a person spends an inordinate amount of time speaking to women, Gorim Rali Asmo, it causes himself harm, Ubokal Medivre Torah, and he wastes time from learning Torah, the Sofo Yoresh Gehenom, and in the end he will inherit Gehenom. Okay. We covered every part of the Mishnah except the last part. That's what we didn't. Altar B'Sicha Im Ha'isha, which you can imagine is a relevant topic today, and therefore I wanted to speak about it. First of all, we're not talking about speaking to one's wife important things. Rabbi Akiva Eger writes in the Tshuva, after his wife was Nifter, and he was nostalgically speaking about her, that they used to stay up way past midnight discussing very important Torah inyanim. So that is not an inordinate amount of speech, because it's important speech. Not only does one have to discuss with his spouse or her spouse Torah, but things that are necessary for the everyday upkeep of the home also is something to discuss. Those are also important things. Discussions of education of children or whatever. What the Mishnah is talking about is what is known in the vernacular as shooting the breeze, meaning idle talk that has no real importance. Stam to talk for the sake of talking. And it probably applies to talking like that to anybody on one level, because you're wasting time. But even to one's wife, and the Mefarshim point out when she is prohibited to the husband. During that time of the month that she's prohibited, that's basically what it's talking about, because it could lead to inappropriate behavior between a husband and wife. And surely, if it can lead to inappropriate behavior between a husband and wife, it most certainly can lead to inappropriate behavior if it's two people who are not married to each other. This idea has nothing to do with putting women down or hadarat nashim. I thought it was hadras nashim. Right? That sounds like a nice thing, right? To glorify women. I was wondering why they're so much against glorifying women. But in any case, somebody told me it's read differently. In any case, it has nothing to do with any of that. The Torah is extremely strict when it comes to separation of the sexes. And the rabbis even more strict. And some people feel that that's not necessary. It's not proper, right? It's haflayah. It's discrimination, right? Everybody should be equal and one big happy family. Part of the problem is that the secular world, and for that matter, a good portion of the Torah world, doesn't appreciate how serious these things are. And therefore, so what's the big deal? So people will talk excessively, right, in a frivolous way. So what? So what? Imagine or women themselves, or men. They don't realize how serious it is to be careful in these inyanim, for women to dress properly. Women, especially younger girls, teenagers or whatever, always say, what difference does it make if an inch here, an inch there, my knee is covered, my knee is uncovered, my elbow is covered, what difference does it make? Would you say the same thing if you have something radioactive that if you're exposed to it could kill you, could cause you terrible, terrible diseases? And somebody tells you, in order to protect yourself from that radioactive material, you need exactly 5 feet of lead between you and the material or more. But anything less than 5 feet will not stop the radioactive rays from hitting you. Would you say, well, you know, 5 feet doesn't make a difference. It's 4 feet and 11 inches, or what's an inch here and an inch there, or a centimeter there and a centimeter here? No, it makes a difference. If it's 5 feet, it's going to stop the radiation. And if it's not 5 feet, it won't stop the radiation. And if it's one bit less, it's not going to work. So in the physical world, you could understand that, right, building a house, right, tell the architect, right, an inch here, an inch there, it's not going to make a difference. It'll make a difference. The whole house will fall down. In the physical world, things have to be exact. And if they're not exact, then either they won't work, or they'll be harmful, or they, whatever. In the spiritual world, it's not, no less like that. And if the Torah and Chazal determine that this is the way a person has to dress, and this is the way a person has to act, because, we'll see in 1 second, these areas are extremely, extremely sensitive areas, then to say, well, an inch here, an inch there, is absurd. If that's the shear, if that is the measure that Chazal determined is what's proper, then that's what's proper. And a little bit less than that is not proper. Why are these inyanim so sensitive? So if you don't realize that radioactive materials are dangerous, then what's the big deal? But if you understand how dangerous they are, then you understand how important it is to be careful and make every kind of fence to make sure that you don't come in contact with it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm going to address this on a few different levels. First level is from the pure practical level. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us with various drives that are healthy and that every healthy human being has. Amongst them, we have a drive to survive. Right? A person, if you put him in water and he can't breathe, he's going to do everything in his power to get out of that water and to be able to take a breath. The drive for survival is the strongest drive a person has. We also have a drive called an appetite, to eat. Right? And at some people have it all the time, some people have it when it's extremely necessary. But if you're starving, everybody has that drive, part of the drive of survival, to eat. Because if you don't eat, you don't survive. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a very natural drive, desire for eating food, an appetite. That is one of our yitzarim. It's one of our drives, one of the things that move us. Similarly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a drive for a sexual drive. And that's also a drive for preservation, for survival, because you can't exist more than one generation without that drive. But there's other reasons. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants a husband and wife to have a very close relationship, ad kedei kach, that they are like one person. As the Chazon Ish said, the relationship between a husband and wife should be like a right hand and a left hand. He didn't say which is the right and which is the left, so don't get the... And in order to do that, part of the means to reach that is a physical relationship. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants there to be a strong attraction between the sexes, just like he wants a strong attraction to food and a strong attraction to survival. those are all yitzarim. They're not good or bad. They are parv. But every force in this world can be used for the good. It can equally be used for the bad. As strong as a force as it is for the good is as strong as it is for the bad. And therefore, if you misuse and abuse those drives and appetites, then they're called the Yetzer Hara. Then they become bad. If you eat the wrong things at the wrong time, in the wrong place, that's Yetzer Hara. Then your drive, your appetite for food has led you to bad things. If you eat the right things at the right time, in the right place, in the right way, it could be a mitzvah. It could be kedusha, Shabbos meal. It could be things that your sacrifices that you eat. The things that are mitzvah to eat. There are things that are part of, that you are allowed to eat. And the things that are also to eat, that you're not allowed to eat. The same thing goes for every drive a person has. Similarly, because the drive, the attraction between men and women is extremely strong, and the reason the Rav Shlomo made it like that is because it has extremely good purposes in this world, and therefore, if used properly, it can lead to the greatest holiness, kedushin. Marriage is called kedushin, holiness. So this drive can lead one to holiness. At the same time, if done improperly, the wrong way, the wrong time, the wrong people, it's tumah. It's the worst impurity. So recognizing that, since God created us and He knows how strong this attraction is, He therefore gave us halachas how to control it and how to make sure that we guard ourselves from using these drives in a or being drawn to use them in a negative way, because He knows how serious it is if you use them in a negative way. And therefore, it's like the radioactivity. If you understand and appreciate how dangerous it is, then you will know how much you have to keep away and protect yourself. If you don't appreciate that there's any danger over here, then why throw caution to the wind? So the people who don't believe or don't understand that if they are led to do things that are not proper, that it is devastating. It harms their neshamos, it harms the world for sins of immorality. That's one of the reasons we go into Golus. That's one of the reasons Eretz Israel is destroyed. It's one of the reasons that the Jewish people are vulnerable to all kinds of misfortunes. If you understand that, then you understand how serious it is and you want to protect yourself. If you don't understand that, and it's no big deal, right? So what's the worst thing that we do? Then, why would you want to be extra careful with something that to you doesn't make any difference? Because you don't understand what the difference is. How strong is this? I'll tell you two stories. Rav El Lapian was the Mashgiach in Kfar Hasidim. He was an old man. He lived into his late 90s, maybe even to 100. And he was still a strong, functioning individual when this Maisa happened. A Bacher came to him in the summer and wanted permission to leave the yeshiva for a day or two because he had a wedding of a close relative that was taking place somewhere else in Eretz Israel, maybe in Tel Aviv, and he wanted permission to attend the wedding and then to attend the Sheva Brachas too. So he needed permission to leave the yeshiva for 2-3 days. So Rav Elie said to him, it's the summer now. Are all your relatives from people who dress properly? He said, no. He said, there definitely are relatives and people will be at the wedding that won't be dressed properly, especially in the summer. So then he said, look, you can go to the wedding, but what are you going to do about this problem? He said, Rebbe, don't worry. I've reached a level where these things don't bother me anymore. So then he said, you can go to the wedding, but I want you to call a friend of mine and speak to him before you go. So he gave him the number, and he figured that this is somebody that lives in that area that Rav Elia Lapian haven't seen in a long time, and since he's going to be there, he wants to give him regards. Comes back an hour later, and he says, Rebbe, I must have made a mistake in taking down the number, because every time I call this number, I get a doctor's office. He said, yeah, that's my friend. He's a doctor. He said, I'm a 90-year-old man. I'm blind in one eye, and these things still bother me. If they don't bother you, there's something seriously wrong with you, and I think you should see a doctor. Another mice. I don't know if you really need any mice in, but it just brings out the point. There was an old Rosh Yeshiva sitting in his office, and a old sickly woman came in for a bracha for a refuah shleima for herself. She came in, bent over, walking slowly, and by accident, she locked the door behind her. So now they were in a position of yichud, which is asr. So the Rosh Yeshiva, there was a window behind him, and it opened up to a terrace, not 10 flights down. It was a terrace. So he went out the window onto the terrace. His students saw this, and later on they said to him, Rebbe, she's an old, sick woman. You're an old man. What would have been so terrible if you got up and walked over and opened the door? It would take another 3 seconds. What could have happened? He said, Talmidim, the Yetzer Hara could have made her well and me young. Sometimes the problem is that women don't appreciate how men function. The women, to a certain degree, again, I can't speak from the woman's side because I never was a woman and never planned to be. But I know. The Rabbanu Shel Olam made men. There's a book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, something like that.
Right.
Men and women are different, and therefore I have daughters who are now have their own teenage daughters, but they were once teenagers too. And I teach in a lot of the seminaries, and I hear that, you know, girls don't understand how men function. And they ask me, what's wrong with having a platonic relationship with a boyfriend who just like my brother, right? Nothing, there's nothing, no innuendos, nothing off color about it. I tell them that's very nice from your standpoint, but from a boy's standpoint, it's not like that. And the truth is that if your relationship with a member of the opposite sex is exactly the same as it would be with a member of your own sex, something's seriously wrong. Then you should really see a doctor, because it's not like that. If you're really honest with yourself, you know that there always is something. And you don't have to be a sick person. You have to be a normal person. Be a healthy person. They have that. And it's not something that is criminal, but it's something that's not permitted, according to the Torah. So, therefore, the Torah made shiogim, made fences, many of them, in these areas, and that's why we're so makbid that children don't learn in the same school. There's a separation of the sexes when it comes to schools. When it comes to functions, simchas, there's separate seating or a mechitza in shul. And it's not because we look down on women or look down on men. Right? Here we have men sitting in the back. So we're going to get people protesting over here, Hadarat Anoshim, what's it called? We're putting down, making men sit in the back of the room, or whatever. It's just that ideally the truth is, maybe we should have put a mechitza over here and make the men sit behind the mechitza, except for me. But it's not out of the realm of understanding if you understand how serious these things are. But if you're not a frum person and you understand that anything in this world is serious, surely not spiritual things, so what could be the worst that will be? Right? Are we afraid that everybody is some kind of sick person that is going to do terrible things if they talk to a woman? No. But thoughts that are improper are also awesome. And they're also serious. So if your understanding of seriousness is only incest or adultery, then maybe, yeah, that most people are not going to commit incest or adultery because they have a casual social connection with a member of the opposite sex. I would imagine that's the case. But yeah, there's other things that are also serious, and the Torah wants to protect against them also. And one thing leads to another. And we know that there are people, even chashuva people, and even respectable people, that if they let their guard down, then it's a slippery slope. And a little bit leads to a little bit more. And people, I mean, look in the news. People who have everything to lose, right, who's their reputation, their families, people in high positions, without going into specific cases, but it's not just one person. It's across the board. How many lives have been ruined? Families have been ruined. How many people's reputations, people who are on the top of the world? Good for them that the world doesn't care too much and forgets very quickly. But what an embarrassment. Presidents of the United States, forget about Israel. Right? People that have everything to lose. And yet, when it comes to these inyanim, the drives are so strong that, and one thing leads to another, and they lose control. And even though logically, intellectually, you would think that they would be careful, that they know that they're getting close to the radiation, it's going to... But you don't function intellectually when you are following your yetzer hara, when you're following your drives, and you don't control them. So on a very practical level, it is very logical, if you understand how serious the consequences are, that person be careful in these areas. It's like on Pesach, not going into a bakery and smelling the nice cakes and bread that are made, thinking that, well, I'm not going to eat any of it. And it's probably even less of a problem there. But you don't put yourself in a situation where you are tempted to do something that you know is dangerous. Dangerous spiritually, and ultimately dangerous physically too, because, again, people's reputations, people's families are ruined because of this. That's one idea. The second idea is the following. If that wouldn't be enough, if our responsibility in this world would only be to be moral, we're supposed to be moral, then maybe being immoral is committing adultery, incest, terrible things. But that is not what we are responsible for. That's what goyim are responsible for. A goy who's moral, who does not do terrible sins, immorality, adultery, whatever, is going to get Olam Haba. A goy only has to keep 7 mitzvahs to get Olam Haba. And they're relatively easy mitzvahs. He shouldn't murder people, shouldn't steal, he shouldn't be immoral in real immorality, shouldn't curse God's name, shouldn't serve idolatry, shouldn't eat meat taken from a live animal. That's one that not too many people have this great desire to eat meat taken from a live animal. And he has to have a social justice system. If he keeps those seven mitzvahs, he'll get a share in the world to come. We do not have a monopoly on the world to come. God created non-Jews, and he gave them a share in the world to come too. All they do is have to do is keep morally right, not destroy and distort the world, to remain in harmony with the morality of the world. That is their responsibility, because they are responsible to create the infrastructure of the world. But we are God's representatives to the world to infuse holiness into the world. We are supposed to be a mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. We are supposed to be a nation of kohanim. What is a kohen? A kohen is God's representative to the Jewish people. We are God's representatives to the world. We are supposed to give the world a conscience that there's a God, and there is that which is right and that which is wrong, and by giving an example of holiness, we let the world know there must be a God, because these people function in a godly way. That is really our goal. There was an individual, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro, who recognized that. His name was Hitler. He wrote in Mein Kampf that he faults the Jewish people. I don't know if this was the major reason why he hated us. He was a maniac anyway. But in Mein Kampf he wrote, he faults the Jewish people for two things: mutilating the body of human beings through Bris Milah, and giving the world a conscience that they think there are things that are wrong to do. So that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to give the world a conscience. And we've been successful to a certain degree, because the major religions that are not pagan religions, Christianity and Islam, are offshoots of Judaism, both of them. Christianity, for sure, is an offshoot. It was started off as a Jewish sect with a Jewish leader. And in fact, even their God is Jewish. So you can't get better than that. I mean, none of our guys ever became God. And Islam originally started as Mohammed wanted the Jews to accept his religion and accept him as a prophet. He was not interested in Goyim. And originally, Islam very much patterned itself after Judaism. They fasted on Yom Kippur, not Ramadan, and they had to wash Netilas Yadayim. A lot of things that he incorporated in his religion to make it attractive to Jews. But Jews are smart, and they weren't interested in this illiterate guy who says that he got a revelation in a cave. Right, we have enough things to believe in. We didn't need Mohammed also. So we didn't accept his religion, which he didn't take too kindly. And then he went out to the pagan Arabs to sell his religion to them, and he was very successful, because to them he had a very convincing argument. Accept my religion or I'll cut off your head. And many people found that to be extremely convincing. And then he became anti-Jewish, because we didn't accept his religion. Same thing with Christianity. They wanted also the intelligentsia of Klal Yisrael to follow them, and only the rabble followed them. They say it themselves in the New Testament. So must be a reason why the people who were intelligent didn't follow them. But in any case, we had an effect. Lamaisa, Christianity and Islam are better than paganism. And they're a step closer towards what the Rabban Shem wants in this world. When we next week get back to Christianity, we'll speak about that. Why God wanted Christianity and Islam to be so successful. There's a reason for it, says the Rambam and others. But in any case, we've, to a certain degree, been successful in giving the world a conscience. But it's more than that. How do we represent God to the world? By being a goy kadosh, by being a holy nation. What does that mean to be a holy nation? I've said this here before, I'm going to say it again. it doesn't mean because we stay in shul and shuckle real lot when we daven. So people say, wow, these people are really like holy rollers, you know, they're really holy people. It's not even because we have all these laws of when we fast and when we dance or whatever. It's in other areas of life that it really is impressive when we live up to it. It applies to every area of life, how we conduct ourselves in our married life, in our social life, in our economic life. And the example I love to give of what holiness means in those areas is a man named Feuerstein, who was the owner of a textile mill right outside Boston about a few years ago, maybe less than 10 years ago. He employed hundreds of people, most of them not Jewish, in his textile mills, a big business. And one day, his mill burnt to the ground. Total loss. Now, morally, he could have said, I don't have a business, you don't have jobs. And nobody would have had any question. Everybody would have understood. That's what he had to do. He could have called the people in and say, look, I'll pay you for the last month that you worked, and I wish you well. If I ever build my business up again, which I plan to do, I will definitely give you all jobs if you're available. But at this point, I don't know when I'm going to build my business up. Go find jobs. He didn't do that. He kept them all on the payroll for a few months until they could find jobs. And after that, he kept them on the books so they wouldn't lose their pensions and they wouldn't lose their medical benefits. The whole world picked up on this. It was in every magazine and every newspaper and radio and television. It was a from Jew. People said, that's holiness. That's a holy way of functioning. Morally, you could get away with a lot less than that. But there must be a God in this world because that's a godly way of acting, and it applies to every aspect of life. Every aspect of life. They say when they were taking away Jews to the concentration camps, and they knew basically what the Yid from the train, from the boxcar, yelled that he had chickens at home that haven't been fed for a few days. Please go home and feed the chickens. Take the animals. Don't let the animals suffer. That's a holy person. So holiness is not only in spiritual things, but even more so in how you function in all the other areas of life. That's what we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be holy. And we have really no choice to fulfill that mission. That's the mission that God gave us, and he didn't ask us if we want it or not. That's what it means that we're the chosen nation. It seems that we've been chosen to suffer a lot more than other nations. But it's not that we're chosen to suffer. The Ribbono Shel Olam has a mission for us. And we're going to fulfill that mission by hook or by crook. And if the Ribbono Shel Olam has to chastise us and punish us in order to get us to do it, then he'll do that. And others, he doesn't expect more from them, and therefore he leaves them. A child that you know has potential, and that you expect a lot from, that child you discipline more than the child you know doesn't have the potential, and what do you expect from it? So, we're chosen, but we're not chosen to lord ourselves over everybody else. We're chosen because we have a responsibility that others don't have. That's the chosenness. And we really have no choice. We are an Am Levadad Yishko. In order to be able to fulfill our mission of being a light to the nations of the world, a representation of godliness to the nations of the world, we by nature have to dwell apart, not isolated from them, because we have to coexist with them, but insulated from them, because otherwise we'll reach the same common denominator and we'll also be moral but not holy. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam said, we're an Am Levadad Yishko. We have to dwell apart. It's one of the reasons he gave us Eretz Yisrael. We can have a place where we can develop a holy society in a holy land where every aspect of society is holy. That's the real purpose of Eretz Yisrael. So we're supposed to dwell apart, not isolated, but insulated. If we do that willingly, then there's a pasuk that we read in Vezos HaBracha and Simchas Torah that says, Vayishkon Yisrael betach bodod. The Jewish people will dwell in security apart. Then we read that pasuk with simcha, which gives us security being apart from the nations of the world. If we choose not to be apart, and we choose to assimilate into the nations of the world, and to maintain their level of morality and not holiness, then we're still going to remain apart. We don't have a choice. In the end, we're going to still be apart. But then we're going to read it sitting on the ground on Tisha B'Av, Eicha Yoshva Badad. The Badad remains consistent. The question is how you reach it. And the Sfarim say the Jewish people are compared to oil, and the nations of the world to water. Water and oil can coexist very nicely if the oil floats on top of the water with a little surface tension separating it. Then the oil protects the water, and the water supports the oil. But if you try to shake the oil into the water, it's not going to last. Eventually, the oil will rise to the surface. And you know what pushes it to the surface? The water pressure. Says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the Jew has only two choices. Either we make Kiddush, or the Goyim make Havdalah. Either we sanctify ourselves and separate ourselves in that way and live a life that we are supposed to live, not influenced by the non-Jewish standards, then we make Kiddush, everything is fine. If we try to assimilate, and it's been in our history, whether it was this week in Mitzrayim, right, this week Sedra, we were fine in Mitzrayim when we lived in Goshen, stayed apart, coexisted with the Egyptians, very nice, helped their country. But you know when the Tzara started? When Vatimalei Ha'aretz Osam, the Medrash says, they started filling up the land of Egypt. They left Goshen. And they started going to the Egyptian circuses and the Egyptian theaters, and they wanted to be more Egyptian than the Egyptians. The Egyptians said, nothing doing. And that's when Vayakom Melech Chodesh on Mitzrayim. That's when they changed their policies. In Spain, when we tried to assimilate into Spanish culture and become more Spanish than the Spaniards, so then also they threw us out. In Germany, same thing. Anti-Semitism, modern day, didn't start in Eastern Europe. Started in Western Europe, where Jews were at the height of the civilization there. They were the doctors and the lawyers and in the highest positions of government. But when they decided they want to assimilate into German, Austrian culture, that's where the Goyim pushed us out. So we don't really have a choice. So, but that's our responsibility. Therefore, yeah, there may be nothing morally wrong with frivolous talk between the sexes. And it may never lead to real immorality. Most people don't lead to real immorality from that. But is it holy? No, it's not holy. And we're responsible to be holy. We have to keep a standard of morality that's holiness, not just moral. And therefore, in order to maintain that level of holiness amongst the Jewish people and each individual, therefore the Torah and the rabbis made fences that we keep up our guard and don't even give the chance to start that slippery slope, which in fact, yes, could lead to immorality, and it has by many people, even good people, even respectable people. And even if it doesn't lead to that, it definitely will affect how holy a nation we are, what kind of standards of holiness we have. And therefore, it says that a person has to always keep his guard up. On the other hand, there is things that are beyond what is necessary. And there are ways of doing this, just like a person says, look, you know, I don't want to eat treif. So therefore they become anorexic, right, bulimic. That's sick. That's not being extra careful about not eating treif. That's sick. That's not normal. For that, you go to a psychiatrist. right? Because that's not what the Torah meant. Torah didn't mean that in order to guard yourself, it meant don't overeat. It meant don't, you know, eat at the times that are in order to eat what you have to eat or whatever, right? Don't go crazy over food. But it didn't mean to be anorexic or bulimic. So too, when it comes to these inyanim, the Torah meant in a normal way, and the Torah describes what the normal way is, and the rabbis describe what a normal way is of separation of the sexes. But when it becomes extreme, to the point where it is not normal anymore, then that in itself is a sickness. Then sometimes the desire to separate yourself has its roots in making too much of these inyanim. And again, I don't want to, you know, make the hackneyed, this became, you know, a political thing, right? Most Haredishi Yidden, including the ones from the groups that are involved in Beit Shemesh or wherever, do not spit at eight-year-old girls, okay? It was an isolated incident that the politicians saw was a great chance to make a big deal about, okay? Most of them are not crazy people. I may not agree with what they hold halachically, but they're not crazy. But there are definitely crazy people. There are crazy people in this world who are Haredi. There are crazy people in this world who are Dati Leumi. And believe it or not, there are even secular people who are crazy. Right. You would think from the media that that never happens, right? Yes.
You know, the question of the man of the owner who went to fire.
Could you speak a little louder?
Excellent.
I'll repeat what she said, yeah.
Yeah, an excellent, you know, to think about. But the fact is, the reason it got such publicity is because it's one in a million.
Okay, okay, you're right, you're right.
I don't know who would do that.
You're right.
My second question, I understand your feelings about separation of sexes. As an American, we went through a great struggle to get all the buses integrated. Why in Israel, why do the men sit in front and the women go to the back? Why wasn't it...
Okay, the only reason I can tell you, okay, is because if the men would be in the back, and the women would be in the front, since buses have a back entrance. So this way, a man doesn't have to sit there and watch all the women parade by as if they are on the Miss Universe pageant walking by them. Right? If already they're separate, but if the women sit in the back and the men sit in the front, the women can get on the back of the bus. And, what?
If they weren't remote, they wouldn't see.
If they would be blind, they also wouldn't see, but people are... I can see, and they opened their eyes. I don't know, even Rav Eliashiv said, you can't force people to have separate buses. If that is not necessarily the mandate of halacha, that you can't go on a bus and sit next to a woman or whatever. Okay, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about the subways in New York. They are not separate, right, to the point where every possible human being and those that are subhuman are all together in the same subway car day after day, okay? If you're ever in the subway in New York, you've seen everything, okay? And every possible whatever, there are probably aliens there at the same time too. And people are squished in like sardines. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says you're allowed to go on the subway because that which the Torah prohibits or the rabbis prohibit is contact that is endearing and chiba, what's it called? What is that called? Endearing, what's it called? Right. The kind of contact that you have with somebody else on the subway is not endearing at all. Unless you are a very sick person and that's why you go on the subway, then you're not allowed to go. But if you're not... you're a normal person, right? It's more like a jungle than anything that could possibly prohibit. However, if you want to be extra careful, so then you have this. And they don't They don't go to Tel Aviv and make the women sit in the back. If you're not interested in being extra careful, then fine. But these buses basically are in Haredi neighborhoods where the people themselves want it, where, to the most part, most of the women want it. Who are the women who don't want it? Women are coming from other things with their photographers and newspaper journalists to make a big deal that they want to sit in the front of the bus. It's not your bus. Nobody ever asked you to be here. You don't live in this neighborhood. Why is that any different than people have a right to have free choice where they want to live and how they want to conduct their neighborhood? You don't want like it, fine. We're not telling you what to do, but don't tell us what to do either. There's freedom in this world for people to function the way they want to function.
I was in Benin, and there is a very famous church there. And when you went in, if you went in, they had sneeze inspectors, and if you were not dressed properly, they gave you a cloak of some sort. Now, nobody, I watched the people going in and out, nobody complained.
When in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Yeah, exactly. So when you're in Yerushalayim, in certain neighborhoods, that's how it is. It's a big deal, you know.
It's not the same thing as... I grew up in Miami. When I first went to Miami, in the supermarket there were two water fountains. One said white and one said colored. I was about 8 years old, and I kept turning on the colored one, and the plain, ordinary white water kept coming out. And I couldn't figure out why it says colored and it's the same water as the other one. Where's the colored water? The same thing with the buses. There, it wasn't that the people wanted this for their own reasons. This was discrimination against people who didn't want to be discriminated against. But here, you're not telling women who want to sit in the front of the bus, get to the back. Talking about people who live this standard of living, that's what they want. So, you can't do it. So the women from the outside come and say, you can't do that. That does that mean that everybody who's on those buses functions properly? So if a woman gets on the bus and she sits in the front, so Nishka Ferla. So somebody's going to make a big deal about it, or yell at her, or whatever, right? Or a certain situation, a woman can't get to the back of the bus. She has little children, whatever, she wants to sit in the front. Nobody normal is going to make a big deal about it. There are plenty of crazies in this world who do. The crazy people who do, that is the problem.
Some of the legal situation with many components do not travel on buses. I have to.
Who don't go on buses? You're fine.
No.
I don't go on buses either.
I
not for that reason.
I'm
yeah.
Oh, this is very old, and I have to take the number 2 bus. And there are many women
Okay, those are not normal people. They're not. And Adarabba, who gave them permission to elbow these women? The Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, what's it called? Got on a bus, and a woman got on the bus and sat next to him, and she wasn't dressed properly. He didn't get up and walk away because he didn't want to embarrass her. The next stop, which wasn't his stop, he got off the bus. That does, again, I'm not defending people who act not right, but that's not what the bus is supposed to be. From what I understand, I don't go on buses, I really don't know.